and 2 Chronicles. 2 Kings and 2 Chronicles 36. 2 Kings and 2 Chronicles. We, of course, are in our current series looking at the five cycles of chastisement out of the book of Leviticus. And what we are currently dealing with is the way we have depicted it. We spend a little bit of time looking at the Assyrian captivity and then at the Babylonian captivity, and which is what we're looking at now. We mentioned that just a little bit. Well, that one's no good. Let's try this one here. Let me just real quickly review. We do have a chart, some charts floating around here somewhere. This is just kind of a little timeline. The nation of Israel goes into the land under the leadership of Joshua. In the days of Joshua, the nation actually does pretty well. What book follows Joshua? Judges. How does the nation do during the period of the Judges? Not so good. And the last verse in the book of Judges, who remembers what it says? Did that which is the right in their own eyes. But against the backdrop of total rebellion is the book of Ruth. Who remembers what the significance of Ruth was? The kinsman redeemer. There's hope. You betcha. Who's the first king once Israel asks for a king? Okay, you have Saul, and then who? And then who?
Solomon.
Now, y'all know more about Old Testament already than most Christians out there all over the place. It's amazing. After the death of Solomon, what happens? There's a split that occurs within the nation. So this became known as the Northern Kingdom, or eventually Samaria, okay? And this is Israel. This one became known as the Southern, or Judah. That's why a lot of times when you're reading the Kings and the Chronicles, in particular Kings, you'll see it says that certain individual was the king over Israel and a certain king over Judah, because it's making the distinction there. All right, who was the first king of the Northern Kingdom over here? Jeroboam, right? And in the south? All the kings in the north, were they good or evil or wicked or what? All of these guys in the north were bad. They eventually got carried off into the Assyrian captivity. In the south, it kind of alternated. Good king, couple of bad kings, couple of good ones, bad and so forth. And they're eventually carried off into the Babylonian captivity. This is where we are in our study now. Relative to the five cycles of chastisement, which is what's brought us here thus far, the five cycles of chastisement are, of course, found in Leviticus 26. That first cycle of chastisement, of course, hits out here in the days of the judges. Second course of chastisement hits when the nation is split. Third course chastisement hits actually over here in the days of Elijah transitioning into in the days of Elisha. Fourth chastisement. The fifth chastisement, cycle of chastisement, hits here in the Northern Kingdom with the Assyrian captivity, and then about 150 years later, the Southern Kingdom with the Babylonian captivity. Okay, so that's just kind of some quick review. And it turns out that the fifth cycle of chastisement, they're not told in Leviticus how long that cycle of chastisement is going to be. It's going to take the prophets to fill those details in. But it does turn out that fifth cycle of chastisement itself also, so if we want to take that fifth cycle of chastisement and bring it down here on this chart, that fifth cycle of chastisement itself also is going to be broken up into five phases. We learned that the first phase is the 70-year servitude to the king of Babylon. And then in the prophecy of Daniel chapter number 9, you learn that there's going to be four more phases. So you wind up with five phases total to that fifth cycle of punishment. 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. Actually, that should be out here. The 70-year servitude winds up being the first phase of that thing. Then they're commanded to go back and rebuild the city and the temple. It's going to be built in troublous times. Then there's going to be this long period of silence. Over 400 years of silence. And then there's going to be the phase of the Messiah, the at-hand phase. And then there's going to be the tribulation phase, and then the kingdom's going to be set up out here. Okay? So that fifth cycle of chastisement is going to encompass these as well. Interesting. You ever wondered why there's a blank page between Malachi and Matthew? That's the silent page. That's when God was silent. He was quiet. Kind of interesting, isn't it? Yeah, that's a long time, right? Yeah.
Would Zechariah be the first word spoken prophetically?
No, great question. After the, who breaks the silence? John the Baptist. He's the voice in the wilderness. No, Zechariah is the high priest. He does prophesy, but John is the prophet of Malachi chapter 3 and Isaiah 40. In Isaiah 40, God indicated that he was going to speak and call Israel to repentance, and Malachi indicates that he was going to be the forerunner, and he was going to be sent after that period of silence. So John the Baptist is the prophet raised up to announce the at-hand phase.
I thought that Zechariah did realize that God was speaking to him.
You mean John the Baptist's father, or do you mean the writer? Okay, what Zechariah is the high priest at the time, and so the Spirit of God speaks through him and prophesies.
But that had been silent throughout the 400 years ago, basically.
God had been completely silent up until even when he began to speak to Zechariah about the birth of John and the angel speaks to Mary and so forth. But John is clearly the one that is said to be the voice in the wilderness. John shows up and breaks the silence, just like God said he would do. Okay, now, we're not all here yet. We're back. We want to finish looking at this issue of them being carried off into the Babylonian captivity. But so that's where we're at today. And what we've looked at, we saw that Hezekiah, back here, southern kingdom, Hezekiah, was he good king or bad king? Who remembers? Yeah, what happened is really just incredible. Just great reformation in the nation. But what happened late in his life, he became sick and the sickness was going to be unto death. He turned his heart, I can't say turned to the Lord because he had been following the Lord, but the Lord adds to him 15 years. During that 15 years, he gives birth to a son. Who remembers what his name was?
Manasseh.
Was Manasseh good or bad?
Bad.
Manasseh does in the southern kingdom what Rehoboam and Ahaz did in the northern kingdom. He makes Baal worship the official religion. Manasseh, absolutely everything his father stood for, everything, Manasseh completely reverses. Alright, now, so we've looked at that already. But then, who winds up being a good king after Manasseh? Josiah, incredible. Josiah, he takes, cleans everything up. He reestablishes the Passover. Who remembers what the Passover was like in Josiah's day? Like never had been before. Unbelievable. All those years when they were keeping the Passover, and they weren't keeping it with their heart. In the days of Josiah, Josiah comes in and sets this thing up. Who remembers? What stirred Josiah's heart? Who remembers? They found the book. He's involved in, Josiah the king sends the men to see how the repair of the temple is going. And then the thing's in shambles and everything. And while they're cleaning things up, the priest finds a book. They read the book. They take it to Josiah. And Josiah sees what it says. And of course, we looked at this last time. We're not going to do this all again. But Josiah believed the word of God. And he understands that great wrath is coming upon the nation, but not in his day. All right?
How would the priest know what to do about the book?
How would the priest know? Well, again, that tells you how bad spiritually it was. Well, let me ask it this way. What about all the preachers in churches today? So it's, see? Yeah. Now, let me suggest something here. Because I think you know enough about the Word of God to know that there's nothing in the Word of God by accident, right? Not any single, there's nothing here by accident. Everything's here for a reason. So the fact that you're told that they found the book and then great restoration occurs, that's got to be in there for some reason. The question comes up sometime, and I'm completely off track of what our study is this morning, but let me just throw something out real quick. The question comes up sometimes, John, once the rapture occurs, since all the believers are taken off the planet, who's going to be around to tell anybody what happened? And how will they know? They're going to find the book. That's why that's there. You're back in the tribulation period. You're back in the time when there's miraculous signs and wonders going on. And one of the things that's going to happen, they're going to find the book. They're going to say, great wrath is determined upon this people. They're going to believe that book. Fascinating. Okay, now let's get back on track here. So, after Josiah dies, then if you look with me at I'm at 2 Kings 23, verse 31. And what's the guy's name right there? Jehoahaz. Okay? Real quickly here. He was 23 years old when he began to reign. Look at verse 32. Everybody with me? He did that which was what? Now verse 33. And Pharaoh Necho put him in bands in Riblah in the land of Hamath, that he might not reign in Jerusalem, and put the land to tribute of 100 talents of silver and a talent of gold. So he takes this guy captive. So Pharaoh Necho made Eliakim, the son of Josiah, king in the room of Josiah's father, and turned his name to what? Okay, this is, I'm writing these down for a reason. Jehoiakim. Notice that is with an M as in Mary there. So he takes Jehoahaz away. He came to Egypt and he died. So Jehoahaz dies down in Egypt. But now Jehoiakim is in charge in the southern kingdom. Verse 35, Jehoiakim gave the silver and the gold to Pharaoh, but he taxed the land to give the money. Isn't that the way government works anyway? You make these obligations and make the people pay it. So, look at verse 36. Jehoiakim was 25 years old when he began to reign. 37, he did that which was what? It's all, these guys are all bad. So this guy's evil. This guy's evil. Okay, not evil Knievel. All right. Now watch what happens. This is going to be significant now. Verse chapter 24, verse 1. In his days, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon. Who was the guy that was causing fear in the previous chapter? Verse 33, verse 34. Pharaoh Necho. That guy's king of who? That guy's down in Egypt. So now look at chapter 24, verse 1. In his days. In whose days? In this guy's days right here. Jehoiakim. Verse 1. In his days, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came up, and Jehoiakim became his servant 3 years. Then he turned and rebelled against him. So he serves Nebuchadnezzar for 3 years. Nebuchadnezzar leaves the guy in power, and basically the tribute that he had been sending down to the king of Egypt, now he has to divert to the king of Babylon. All right? King of Babylon quickly is rising to power over the world. Verse 2 is significant. And the Lord sent against him bands of the Chaldees, bands of the Syrians, bands of the Moabites, and bands of the children of Ammon, and sent them against Judah to destroy it. Watch this. According to the word of the Lord which he spake by his servants the prophets. Next to that verse you want to write down such as, or i.e. or something like this, such as Jeremiah, Isaiah, Ezekiel. Such as. In other words, when he says according to the word of the prophets. And we're going to look at a few in Jeremiah this morning. Okay? Look at verse 3. Surely at the commandment of the Lord came this upon Judah, to remove them out of his sight for the sins of Manasseh according to all that he did, and also for the innocent blood that he shed, for he filled Jerusalem with innocent blood which the Lord would not pardon. That is such a type and a picture of what's going to happen out there in the tribulation period. If that verse says he filled Jerusalem with innocent blood, well, nobody's innocent. So what does it mean? Everybody's sin.
Killing babies.
Yeah, and not just babies, but the believers. He's killing the remnant. He's seeking to annihilate the remnant out of Jerusalem. Those that stood against him and said, no, that's not how we're supposed to be following the Lord. And isn't that what's going to happen out there in the tribulation period? He's going to seek to slay the remnant. Okay? So, you can see verse 5. Now, the rest of the acts of Jehoiakim and all that he did and so forth. Now, so he dies. Look at verse 6. So Jehoiakim slept with his fathers, and Jehoiachin, his son, reigned instead. Okay, so now who reigns? Is that C-H-I-N?
Yes.
Okay. This can get a little confusing, but M... Just remember M goes before N, right? You got Jehoiakim, Jehoiachin. This guy's going to come up again in just a minute, okay? In this guy's days, Jehoiakim, Nebuchadnezzar starts the invasion. He begins to send bands. He himself doesn't come. As it says there, he began to send bands of the Chaldees and the Syrians and the Moabites and the Ammonites. He was in allegiance, an alliance with these guys. And so he said... That's when they start. Yeah. Nebuchadnezzar's...
The other band were his captive.
That's exactly correct. Yeah, he's quickly rising to power, and that's all going to be significant here in just a minute, okay? Look at verse 7. And the king of Egypt came not again anymore out of his land. Why? For the king of Babylon had taken from the river of Egypt and unto the river Euphrates all that pertained to the king of Egypt. This guy's totally dominating. You got to ask the question, okay, well, why is that in the Bible? Why are we told that there? What is happening is this. God himself is turning everything over to the king of Babylon. God himself is doing it. That's why he's rising to power. When you look back at verse 2, it says, and the Lord sent against him. Verse 3, surely at the commandment of the Lord came this upon Judah. Who is it that is giving Judah over to Babylon? God is. Why is God doing this? The fifth course of chastisement. God said he would do this. Alright, and we're going to come back to that again. I'm going to give you lots of verses on that here in just a minute. So look at verse 8. Jehoiachin was 18 years old when he began to reign. Look at verse 9. He did that which was what? Evil in the sight. Now watch verse 10. At that time, the servant of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came up against Jerusalem, the city, and the city was what? Besieged. And Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came against the city, and the servants had besieged it. So now, he doesn't simply send the armies, he sends his general, and he himself also comes and sees what's going on here. The first siege of Jerusalem happens in Jehoiakim's day. Okay? The second siege happens in Jehoiachin's day. Look at verse 12. And Jehoiachin, king of Judah, went out to the king of Babylon. He and his mother and his servants and his princes and his officers and king of Babylon took him. Verse 13, he carried out thence, watch what he does. He carried out thence all the treasures of the house of the Lord, the treasures of the king's house, cut in pieces all the vessels of gold of Solomon. Look at the detail that you're told here. Solomon, king of Israel, had made in the temple of the Lord, as the Lord had said. And he carried away all Jerusalem, and all the princes, and all the mighty men of valor, even 10,000 captives, and all the craftsmen of smiths. None remained, save the poorest sort of the people of the land. And he carried away Jehoiachin, king, to Babylon, the king's mother, the king's wife, his officers, and the mighty of the land, those carried into captivity from Jerusalem to Babylon, and all the men of might, even 7,000 and craftsmen, smiths, thousands, a thousand, all that were strong and apt for war, even them the king of Babylon brought captive to Babylon. This is the second siege. Okay? And he deports some people to Babylon. Now look what he does at verse 17. And the king of Babylon made Mathaniah, his father's brother, king in his stead, and changed his name to what? Zedekiah. Okay? So now you've got Zedekiah. You're told how old he is in verse 18. Verse 19, what does it say there? Evil or good? Okay. Look at verse 19 again. He did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord according to all that Jehoiakim had done. For through the anger of the Lord it came to pass in Jerusalem and Judah until he had cast them out from his presence that Zedekiah rebelled against the king of Babylon. So what happens is this guy comes in charge and then he rebels against Babylon. Okay, now chapter 25 is significant. Chapter 25 gives you a date, a mark here. And it came to pass in the ninth year of his reign, in the ninth year of Zedekiah, in the tenth month, in the tenth day of the month. Now, anytime the Bible gives you something that exact, you know it's there for a reason, right? What's that? Yeah. So here's what happens, that Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came he and all his host against Jerusalem and pitched against it, and they built forts against it round about. The city was besieged since the 11th year of King Zedekiah. On the 9th day of the 4th month, the famine prevailed in the city, and there was no bread for the people of the land. And the city was broken up. All the men of war fled by night, by the way of the gate between two walls. And so they get captured, of course. Verse 5, the army of the Chaldees pursue after the king, overtook him in the plains of Jericho and so forth. Look at what he does. Verse 6, so they took the king and brought him up to the king of Babylon, to Riblah. They gave judgment upon him, and they slew the sons of Zedekiah before his eyes and put out the eyes of Zedekiah. Now what's all that a picture of? Here this guy is the king. You slay his sons before his eyes, and then you put his eyes out. But by slaying his sons, what are you doing? Cutting off the seed line. And what else? And then when you put out his eyes, what are you doing?
That's the last thing that happened before he lost his vision.
And therefore? Yeah, physical sight is a type of what? Spiritual sight. Israel's now in blind. See what's going on there? Isn't that something? The times of the Gentiles officially start right there. That phrase, the times of the Gentiles. The times of the Gentiles. The national judgment of the nation starts right here in this chapter. The times of the Gentiles officially start right here, historically for the nation of Israel. And the times of the Gentiles, that prophetic phrase, not the phrase, listen very carefully, not the phrase, the fullness of the Gentiles in Romans 11. That's a totally different concept, totally different issue. But the times of the Gentiles start officially right there. That phrase, the times of the Gentiles, is a reference to the time when God Himself gave the authority of His nation to another nation. He Himself raised up another nation to take over. First time in history it ever happened. The official turnover of the nation of Israel to another nation. The times of the Gentiles is a reference to the time when the Gentile powers rule until Messiah comes and rules. So, how long will the times of the Gentiles last? Until what event? A little bit further. Second coming of Jesus Christ. Because, see, even during that tribulation period, Gentiles were still in power. Remember that? The Antichrist kingdom is still in power. So the times of the Gentiles run until... And remember, you're talking prophecy, right? Not the mystery. Now, let's keep going. I know we're covering a lot here, but we've got to get something else. Now, this is significant. Verse 8, and in the 5th month, on the 7th day of the month, which is the 19th year of King Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came Nebuzaradan, captain of the guard, a servant of the king of Babylon, unto Jerusalem. And now what does verse 9 say? And he burnt the house of the Lord, and the king's house, and all the houses of Jerusalem, and every great man's house burnt he with fire. Now what's significant about that?
Totally wiped out.
Totally wiped out. Good. What? And what's that? You betcha. Yeah. When he burns the house of the Lord, obviously the Lord's vacated already. God gave this over to him. Now what you're going to find, and we're not going to see it this morning, but what you're going to find in prophecy, of course Nebuchadnezzar thought he did it by his power and everything. But when you're told there in that verse that he burnt the house of God, think of it from the satanic perspective. What is Satan doing now? I won. You may have beaten me back there in Egypt, and you killed my firstborn, and you destroyed my nation and my economy, but now look who's in charge. Isn't that interesting? They burnt the house of God, the very place where God said the soles of his feet were going to be, and where he was going to dwell among his people forever. Yeah, right. Forever didn't last too long, Satan is saying. He burns the house of God. We got rid of this guy. I'm in power. You got to know that's what Satan's thinking is. But who's actually controlling all this and why? God is doing this. Why? Is it because God, before the foundation of the world, predetermined all this? No, no, no. What did the five cycles of judgment say? The fifth course of chastisement said, Israel, if you continue to rebel against me, I will take you off the land. I will give my land over to other nations. So, with that in mind then, let's just go back, if you would, go back to chapter 24 of 2 Kings. Chapter 24 of 2 Kings, and notice verse 2, it says, "And the Lord sent against him bands of the Chaldees and bands of the Syrians." So, who sent these guys? Verse 3, "Surely at the commandment of the Lord came this upon Judah." There are these three sieges, okay? The first one, it's a small group is carried off and so forth. Interestingly enough, it looks like, which one of the prophets when he writes is a captive in Babylon? I just have to give the answer. It looks like Daniel was carried off in that one right there. I'll show you why in just a minute. And then in the second one, there's at least 17,000 that are carried off, okay? And then by the time the third one's done, man, everything's burnt. Even the poor of the land, they're just little people left and that's it. They even rebel. Now, look with me, if you would, over, first of all, to hold your place there in 2 Kings and then go to Daniel 2. I don't think we're going to get time. Do you still have 2 Chronicles? On your way to Daniel, do turn there real quick. Okay. Yeah, while you're in the neighborhood there. Okay. I just want you to see one reference here, one verse. 2 Chronicles 36. I want you to see it. Okay, 2 Chronicles 36, notice verse. Let's get a time reference here. 2 Chronicles 36, verse 1. Then the people of the land took who? Okay, so there's Jehoahaz. Jump down to verse 5. Who do you have now? Jehoiakim. And then jump down, if you would, to verse 9. Who do you have? And then who do you have at verse 11? Verse 13 says he rebelled. Verse 14, "Moreover, all the chief of the priests and the people transgressed very much after all the abominations of the heathen, polluted the house of the Lord, which he had hallowed in Jerusalem. And the Lord God of their fathers sent to them by his messengers, rising up betimes and sending, because he had compassion on his people and on his dwelling place." But what did they do? "But they mocked the messengers of God, despised his words, misused his prophets, until the wrath of the Lord arose against his people, till there was no remedy." See that? We're not going to look at it, but when you get next time you read the book of Jeremiah, you're going to see that there's about three different times where God tells Jeremiah, he says, similar kind of thing, he says, "Jeremiah, don't even pray for these people anymore." He just flat out tells Jeremiah, "Don't even pray for them. There's no remedy. The wrath's coming. I've delayed as long as I could. I sent messengers. I sent prophets. And they stoned one," you know, just like, obviously the parallel with the ministry of Christ, right? Well, go back with me at...
In John chapter 5, verse 16,
very similar. Very similar, except out, that's a great connection, by the way. Out there, when he says there's a sin unto death, don't even say to pray for it. Number one, it's very similar. It's got the pattern back there in the Old Testament. Number two, what that one winds up being out there is that they actually take the mark of the beast. Once they take that mark of the beast, he says, don't even pray for the guy anymore. There's no remedy. Okay, so it's excellent connection that you saw that there. Okay? All right, now then, let's do this. Now go to Jeremiah 25. And Daniel 2, Jeremiah 25, let's just get a couple of these here. You want to have Jeremiah 25, Jeremiah 27, Daniel 2, and we'll start with the one in Daniel. Okay, look at Daniel chapter 2. In Daniel chapter number 2, you all remember from your Sunday school class, Daniel chapter number 2 is where you have the record of Nebuchadnezzar getting this dream of this great colossal image. The head was of gold, and the chest and the arms of silver, and that type of thing. I tried to draw it before, and you guys gave me such a hard time, I'm not going to do it again, okay? But that great image... Daniel, and by the way, that image depicts the times of the Gentiles. That's what it is. Babylon, Media, Persia, Greece, Rome, but then, of course, eventually the kingdom of the Antichrist. That whole sequence, that's the times of the Gentiles. It's going to be destroyed when the Messiah comes back. Well, here, when Daniel interprets this vision for Nebuchadnezzar, I want you to see what Daniel says. Look at verse 31, Daniel 2:31. Thou, O king, sawest, and behold, a great image. This great image, whose brightness was excellent, stood before thee. The form thereof was terrible. This image's head was of fine gold, his breast and his arms of silver, his belly and his thigh of brass, his legs of iron, his feet part of iron, part of clay. Thou sawest tell that a stone was cut out without hands, which smote the image upon his feet that were of iron and clay, and break them to pieces. Now, obviously, the stone is the Messiah. Then was the iron, the clay, the brass, the silver, the gold broken in pieces together, and they came like the chaff of the summer threshing floor, and the wind carried them away, that no place was found for them, and the stone that smote the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. That's obviously a reference to the kingdom. See that? Now, look at Daniel's interpretation. This is the dream, and we will tell the interpretation thereof before the king. Thou, O king, are king of kings, for the God of heaven hath given thee a kingdom, power and strength and glory. Who is it that Daniel believed gave kingdom, the kingdom to Nebuchadnezzar? God did. This was an absolute intervention in human history to raise up Nebuchadnezzar and his kingdom to power. Now watch this. Verse 38, and wheresoever the children of men dwell, the beasts of the field, the fowls of heaven, hath he given unto thine hand, and hath made thee ruler over them all. Thou art this head of gold. See that? As far as Daniel's concerned, this was an absolute intervention of prophecy, of the prophetic program. Now, watch this then. Do a comparison with Jeremiah 25. Do Jeremiah 25. The event that you're going to read here in Jeremiah 25 happens before Nebuchadnezzar gets the vision that we just read about in Daniel 2. Look what God said through Jeremiah the prophet. Jeremiah 25, verse 8. I'm just jumping into the context here. Therefore thus saith the Lord of hosts, because ye have not heard my words, behold, I will send and take all the families of the north, saith the Lord, and who? Nebuchadrezzar, the king of Babylon. What are the next two words there? My servant, and will bring them against this land, and so forth. You see, God used Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonians as his servant, as the chastising hand against his people. God is the one that did this. You've got to remember, at that time in human history, God was intervening in the affairs of men, the nations. And God comes along and he uses Nebuchadnezzar as the chastising hand against Israel. That's why he says, Nebuchadnezzar, my servant. I sent this guy. Now, look with me, if you would, also over to chapter number 27. Watch this. Same book, Jeremiah 27. Verse 1, Jeremiah 27, verse 1, says this, in the beginning of the reign of Jehoiakim, well, right there, right? The son of Josiah, king of Judah, came this word to Jeremiah from the Lord, saying, so that tells you when Jeremiah got this particular vision in chapter 27. Thus saith the Lord to me, make thee bonds and yokes, and put them upon thy neck. So Jeremiah is literally supposed to make bonds and yokes and put them on his own neck. Okay? And send them to the king of Edom, and the king of Moab, and the king of the Ammonites, and the king of Tyrus, and the king of Zidon, by the hand of the messengers which came to Jerusalem unto Zedekiah, king of Judah. And command them to say unto their masters. So he sends these things to these various Gentile empires. See that? Well, what's the message from the true and living God to these various Gentile empires? And command them to say unto their masters, thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, thus shall you say unto your masters, I have made the earth and man and the beasts that are upon the ground by my great power and by my outstretched arm, and have given it unto whom it seemed meet unto me. Watch verse 6. And what? And now, have I given all these lands into the hand of who? Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, my servant, The beasts of the field have I given unto him also to serve him. And all nations shall serve him and his son and his son's sons. Three generations until the very time of his land come. And then many nations and great kings shall serve themselves of him. See what God does right there? God sends a message through Jeremiah to all the nations around. And he said, you know, guess who I'm putting in charge now? I'm putting Nebuchadnezzar in charge. Even my own people are going to come under his authority. If we were some of those Gentile nations, what should we do? Who should we go serve? Nebuchadnezzar. Right? See what's going on here? We should go serve Nebuchadnezzar. We better not rebel against him. Now, I said earlier that the chapter you read over there about the times of the Gentiles, see, officially, if you want to put a time mark when God pronounced it, it's right there. God sends Jeremiah and says, listen, go tell those nations, the times of the Gentiles, their rulership over my people, I'm giving it to Nebuchadnezzar, he's in charge now. Him, his son's sons, and other nations are going to come and so forth, but that time of the Gentiles start right there. Now, understanding these things, it helps us to understand so many, many other things about what's going on in the Old Testament. As an example, in the book of Isaiah, as well as in Jeremiah, but oftentimes you'll hear God through the prophets saying things like this, that I create evil. And so people say, see, God is the author of sin, because he created evil. But in the context of him, quote unquote, creating evil, does anybody want to, now that you know what's going on here, anybody want to understand or think or take a guess at what that evil is that God, quote unquote, creates? It's the chastisement. Exactly. God said, I'm going to bring in evil people upon you. It isn't the sense of, well, I created sin, I created evil back there sometime before the foundation of the world and all the Calvinistic concept. When he says, I create evil, he says, man, I'm bringing that Gentile world power on you. But back to the other question, why is God doing this? Who remembers why? Yeah, because they rebelled against His Word. But why is He doing it? What did the Word say? If you do this, Israel entered into a law covenant with God. God was obligated to keep His part of the covenant. And God told them ahead of time, if you do this, then I have to do this. And Israel said, all that the Lord has said we will do. God was obligated to do this. And God laid out ahead of time what the consequences would be. And God extended mercy. Remember like the one passage we read? I sent messengers. I sent prophets to them until there was no remedy. I delayed as long as I could. So this isn't just the God wakes up one morning now is mad at Israel type thing. So when you understand what's going on in all this, this answers so many of those questions back there in the Old Testament. Go ahead, Berta. It's in, let me just see if I can find the reference. I may have to bring that next time. Let's see here. If I can't find it real quickly here, I'll look it up during the break and then I'll give it to you then. Because I've got a couple other things I want to go over here. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't see it right now. Let me find that during the break, okay, and then I'll bring it up next week again, okay, on that one. But that is a verse that is often used to say that we'll see God as the author of sin and that type of thing. Okay, now go with me if you would. Do you still have the book of Jeremiah open? Okay, go with me if you would to Jeremiah and Jeremiah 22. How are we doing on time, by the way? We're over time already here. Let me just show you one other thing here real quick. Okay, look at Jeremiah 22, verse 28. Jeremiah 22, verse 28. It says, is this man Coniah? Everybody with me there? Is this man Coniah a despised, broken idol? The answer is yes, by the way, okay? Is he a vessel wherein is no pleasure? Yes, he is a pleasure, no pleasure. Wherefore are they cast out, he and his seed, and are cast into a land which they know not? And now watch this. O earth, 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 hear the word of the Lord. Why would God tell the earth to listen up? Yeah, but notice, he doesn't say, oh nations, he doesn't say, oh people, he doesn't even say, oh world. He says, oh earth, listen up. No, he excluded the heavens here. Yeah, that's true too. What does the second verse in the Bible say? And the earth. What's all this about back here? The throne over the earth. Right? And when you're down here, Jehoiakim, Jehoiachin, Zedekiah, whose authority over the earth is now in doubt, supposedly? God's authority is now in doubt over the earth. So he tells the earth to listen up. Because the issue is a battle over the earth, a throne over the earth. O earth, 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 hear the word of the Lord. Thus saith the Lord. Write ye this man, what man? Verse 28, Coniah. He says, write ye this man childless, a man that shall not prosper in his day, for no man of his seed shall prosper sitting upon the throne of David and ruling any more in Judah. He absolutely curses this man's seed line. Well, which one of these guys is Coniah? I don't see a Coniah on there. Which one is he? You got it. Who is he? Who said it? Yeah, where'd you find that? Yeah, how about verse 24? Good. It always helps to read the Bible, right? As I live, saith the Lord, that though Coniah, the son of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, wore the signet upon my right hand, yet would I pluck thee thence. Okay, so who is Coniah? He's that guy right there. See that? No, he's the son. Did you get it right? As I live, saith the Lord, though Coniah, the son of Jehoiakim, see, he's the son of this guy, he's that guy. See that? Remember, some of these guys have their name changed too and everything. But look, you know, do you see who he is? He's the son of Jehoiakim. M. That's why I said the M and the N. Everybody with me on there? Okay, quickly, because we're out of time. But watch this. Look at what it says. As I live, saith the Lord, though Coniah, the son of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, wore the signet upon my right hand. What's the signet upon the king of a right hand? That's his authority. Though he was my authority, though he was my right-hand guy, yet would I pluck thee hence. He pronounces a curse upon this guy's seed line. Zedekiah is not even of his seed line. That king of Babylon put this guy in power. This guy's seed line is cursed forever. Well, it gets to that issue eventually. So what's the question? If this guy's seed line is cursed forever, look at verse 30 again. Thus saith the Lord, write ye this man childless, a man that shall not prosper in his days, for no man of his seed shall prosper sitting upon the throne of David and ruling any more in Judah. If he curses this guy's seed line, what's the question now? What does Satan think now? Satan think, I won. There's no royal seed left. I didn't have to curse him. God cursed him. That's why I said that when he says, oh, earth, 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 listen up. The issue is a throne over the earth. But God has just cursed the seed line through which it looks like Messiah's got to come. So now what's the question? Where's it going to come from? Or has it failed? That's why God makes this promise to the earth. He doesn't make this promise here to the nations and the people. He says, listen, earth, you're mine. I'm going to get you. It's going to look right now like I'm totally abandoning you. I'm totally cursing the seed line, which he does. But earth, listen, I've got this thing figured out. Don't you, earth, don't worry. See that? Guess what he happens to say in chapter 23, verse 5. Behold, the days come, saith the Lord, that I will raise unto David a what? A righteous branch. Isn't that what we've needed all along? And a king shall reign and prosper, and shall execute judgment and justice. Where? In the earth. In his days, Judah shall be saved. Israel even shall dwell safely. This is his name whereby he shall be called. He's going to be called the Lord our righteousness. See how he confirms that to the earth. He says, listen, earth, don't worry about this. Everything looks like it's totally falling apart right now. But it's going to be fine because I'm going to raise up my king. He's going to be king over Judah and Israel, the united nation, and we're going to be fine. Isn't that incredible? So we're out of time. Okay. All right. Well, it's a lot to go over. You're dismissed. Well.